welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. Tell me, what do you think when you think of introvert? Typically, the term connotes shy, withdrawn, or maybe even lacking confidence, but I'm not sure that's the whole story. Our guest today, Steve Friedman, will help us understand much more about the strengths and attributes of those, might I say, blessed with the gift of introversion. By using the word blessed, I guess I give away the fact that I am indeed an introvert, and yet people rarely see me as one. But believe me, those close to me have no doubt I thrive on being alone and in solitude. In fact, when quarantine first began a couple of years ago as an introvert, I was proud to say, you know, I've been practicing for this my whole life. My guest, Steve Friedman, is author of two books on introversion. His latest book is The Corporate Introvert, and his first book was a memoir titled In Search of Courage, An Introvert Story. With that, let's get Steve on the show. Steve Friedman, welcome to the next chapter with Charlie.
Thank you so much, Charlie. Great to be with you.
Yeah, it's good to be with you. You know, Steve, I think I'd like to begin the show with a brief discussion about your time at Shell Oil. You were an executive Shell Oil in Houston, Texas for 30 years. In the early days, I know it seemed to you that you might have been a bit different than what the corporate culture demanded, but you didn't always know that you were an introvert. Tell me that story.
Charlie, it really started from my earliest childhood memories that I just felt different. I had three older sisters that happened to be now in retrospect, I could say they were all extroverts. And in comparison, my parents' comparison, I just was different. I didn't know why, but I felt different, and that, especially in the formative years, really did stunt my self-esteem. When I started at Shell after college, I was still in this phase of just feeling different and really not identifying introversion as the source of it or anything else at that point. It was a couple of years later when I started to read about it and connect with the term of introversion. So I went into the corporate world after college feeling different. And I looked around and I saw people that, you know, seemed to be very comfortable in their own personality, and that was just not me. And it was a challenge from the very beginning.
You know, I've had some experience in the oil industry, and it is there seems to be an almost military structure of command and control that goes on in the oil industry. And there's not a lot of room for dialogue, discussion, collaboration. That doesn't fit the makeup of an introvert, does it?
No, not at all. Yeah, I think your description is accurate, especially I started back in the late 80s. I think it's changing, but, you know, it may change in general, but there's still managers out there that believe in the command and control, believe in hiring people that are just like them. And so it makes it really, really difficult for introverts who just fly with a different flag and approach things differently. But I do think that the environment in many companies, including some in the oil industry, is starting to change, perhaps under the banner of diversity and inclusion, actually.
Yeah, I know in the 1990s we were trying to do some things about it, although it wasn't dealing with introversion as a discipline, but it was talking about teamwork and accountability with teams. And so, it was sort of going counter to the command and control. It's interesting always in large corporations is that middle management is the first to change and upper management is the last to change because it's protection of position. How do I change because I risk losing my position? And so that command and control, how does that interfere with the disposition of an introvert?
On the surface, I think some people might think introverts would like that. They've got somebody that's telling them what to do. They're not compelled to have to speak out because somebody is, in essence, speaking for them. However, as introverts discover, we have a lot of strengths. And one of our strengths is, by our very nature, is that we're very introspective. And when we're introspective, we think a lot. We analyze situations. We're really good at balancing the analysis of pros and cons and finding key learnings out of conversations that other people, especially those that shoot from the hip, often overlook. So as an introvert, we it's our nature to kind of think about that analysis and have opinions. Perhaps some of the challenge of many introverts is to find a way to tactfully share those opinions, but we want to and we need to. So when we're in a command and control, when those other differing opinions are just not appreciated or sought, and certainly the time is not provided to people that are kind of the quieter, more reserved people in most situations at work, then it can be extremely frustrating for introverts.
Absolutely. And, you know, and there's such a need for, I love the word pondering, you know, and reflecting. Mm. There's such a need to me for the introvert to ponder and reflect. I'm not ready to give when say, okay, what do you think about this? Well, you know, I need to think about it. I need to think of the ramifications. I need to think of both sides. I need to think what is wise. So give me a few hours or I can come back to you tomorrow with a much more intelligent answer. And in this sort of we've got to make it happen yesterday style runs counter to the corporate, to much of the corporate structure of doing things, doesn't it?
It certainly does. I mean, people expect that in the meeting, we're going to pound fists on the table. We're going to have all sorts of people chiming in and a decision will be made. But really, that's oftentimes not the best recipe for the best decisions, because as you said, roughly half the people in that room and in that company are introverts, people that generally need some time. You know, I say we need time and space oftentimes to perform at our best. And so some leaders and managers provide that time and recognize it, and others have no patience whatsoever for it. But so if you can find those situations where the time is provided, and also as an introvert to make sure we utilize our time to plan and prepare for meetings and discussions like that, then we're going to be much better off and prepared to have that discussion and add our comments, or when necessary to say, listen, I do need some more time to come back. But usually when we do, we come back with some pretty insightful observations and suggestions that make a difference in the how the team operates.
Oh, absolutely. What would you say, you know, as our audience is listening and they're wondering the difference between extroversion and introversion, do you have sort of, you know, the basic nuts and bolts of either what makes up an introvert or the distinctions between an introvert and an extrovert?
Sure. So you mentioned at the very top a little bit of a stereotypical definition of introverts is loners and antisocial, wallflowers, aloof. There's all sorts of words that are actually still in today's dictionaries and thesauruses. So that's definitely a point of angst for me.
And if I may add to that just one moment, there are, and I don't want to call it pathological, but there are people that are shy and afraid to come out. I mean, I know introverts that just can't hold a conversation because they are not equipped to do so. So there are those kind of people, but if you lump those in to all of introverts, there are a very, very small percentage of a population that is not introverted so much as they genuinely are just shy and afraid. So those people do exist,
right. But
they are not what comprise introversion at large. Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree. You know, to follow up on that, you know, we're not, all of us are complex creatures. So one word or label can't define us, whether an introvert or an extrovert or any other label. And so, as you say, oftentimes introverts are also shy, but it's not the same thing. Some introverts and some shy people have social anxiety. Some extroverts have social anxiety, and that is another thing. And so it's not necessarily the introversion that is creating that reservation, but it's definitely a combination of things that need to be tackled kind of separately in some cases, although they do overlap.
Yeah, I like that. I like that term, social anxiety. That is common no matter where you fall on the introversion-extroversion scale, because That's something much deeper that goes to the core of us and the security we have in our core. I wanted to ask if we could elaborate just a little bit. What would you say would be the top four or five qualities of an introvert that distinguishes them from an extrovert?
On my website, we did a survey. We have a quiz that's available for anybody to take.
And yeah, which is Beyond Introversion. I will post that at the end of the...
That's right. So we've had over 1,600 people take that quiz. So what's oftentimes percolated to the top are about four different strengths. So not everybody has these strengths. Everybody's different. But these tend to be the most prolific among introverts. They are learning, listening, planning, and thoughtfulness. So when you compare those to extroverts, not to say that extroverts can't plan or that they don't listen, but these tend to be the strengths that stand out when you compare the average or typical introvert, if you will, with a typical extrovert. So planning, we talked a little bit about that, and the opportunity to give ourselves time by planning for a meeting or even planning for a social event and planning on how we're going to approach that and how we're going to engage with other people. Questions that we might ask during the meeting or social event, that really helps us. Extroverts don't really need that, right? They come into one of those events and they can just shoot from the hip. They're very comfortable with that. They chit-chat very easily. But we have to recognize that's just not our strength. Our strength is to plan. And if we embrace that strength, we can do quite well in those situations that many people think are obstacles or no-go zones for introverts.
If I may, as an aside, as a consultant and a facilitator of teams, those that shoot for the hip and just sort of run like a fun meeting are very ineffective meetings. There must be an agenda, desired outcomes, a flow. What are we going to decide? What are we not going to decide? That is an effective meeting. So to run it shooting from the hip is an irresponsible way. It has nothing to do with introversion and extroversion. It's just a behavior that's an irresponsible way of running significant meetings if you want to take people's time. So please go ahead. I just wanted to agree with you on that.
I definitely agree with that. And I think the leading companies and teams have recognized that. And whether their leader, the team leader, is an introvert or an extrovert, I think they're starting to recognize that they need to have this diversity around the table, diversity of gender and race and all sorts of other diversity of background, but that includes a diversity of thought and perspective. And so that you may have some people that shoot from the hip and they may come up with some great ideas, but you also very much need to have somebody else in that room or a good number of people in that room that are challenging, that are thinking through the pros and cons, that are asking pointed questions in order to flesh out the very best solutions. And introverts are pretty well equipped to play that role. It's kind of a natural role for them. So I think that's helping to get them a more prominent seat in those rooms.
Excellent. You know, I want to kind of circle back just a little bit. And we were talking about your early days at Shell. Now, you struggled with the culture at Shell early on for your first decade or so, and thinking there was something wrong with you until you understood that you were an introvert, that you were hardwired, you were DNA'd differently than a lot of the people in the company, and that had to be so enlightening. Can you tell me when you finally realized that introversion was part of your DNA? How did that impact your life? And I'm thinking both internally and externally.
Yeah, it was a complete sea change. I heard the term introversion actually from a personality test that our team did at Shell in my early days. And so I heard the term introversion and it applied to me, but we didn't have a lot of discussion around it. And so I was not provided with a lot of information about what that really is. And so I didn't gravitate to, oh, what are all my strengths, but I gravitated to the stigmas and definitions that we talked about earlier. So even though I connected with that term, I felt that it was still very negative for a good 10 or 15 years. What I struggled with, the things that you would expect, lots of social interaction, lots of meetings where I felt like I should be battling for time with everybody else in the meeting room because that seemed to be the status quo. Interaction with outside parties always made me nervous. And I had a lot of that in my roles at Shell. And so I oftentimes found very unhealthy ways to cope with that internal struggle. And
What would be unhealthy ways
I drank too much. Certainly, I felt that if I had a drink in my hand, it relaxed me and enabled me to participate in those social situations, which might be true to an extent, but, you know, there's a fine line between participating and really kind of being a bit sloppy, certainly yeah. being myself. I ate too much. I was nervous all the time. I went to my doctor about midway through my career, and I said, you know, I've got shingles. I've got sciatica down my legs. I've got a rash across my face. What's going on?
Oh, my goodness.
We talked about it for a while, and he said, listen, you know, it's the stress of the job that is creating this. I can give you creams and all sorts of other stuff to try and help you out, but until you change your situation or change your approach, this is kind of what your situation is. And that really hit home. But I tell you, what really changed my path was I was on an expat assignment for Shell in London, and I had a team across the world, which was a fabulous work experience, but it was not very easy for an introvert to get to know people on an intimate basis by traveling 50% of the time and talking to people on the phone a lot. It was very difficult for me. And so midway through that assignment, I had the benefit of having a weekend out in the Far East during a two-week trip. And I spent that weekend, and I was journaling, and I just realized, you know, my life is a mess. And I realized this is not good. I mean, things at home were not great because I was not taking care of myself. I wasn't taking care of them. I was just a mess. And I really realized then that I need to either leave the company and find another job that is going to be better for me, and I really didn't know what that meant, or I needed to find my true self and change the way I approached my job. And like with many introverts, I think their course changes by some understanding that things need to change, and maybe some engagement with either other introverts that are comfortable to talk about it, or a book like Susan Cain's Quiet, or a website, or something else. For me, after that trip, I went back to London. I engaged with a therapist, and that therapist shared with me the strength of introverts and really challenged the emotions that were leading me through my life. And that really changed my course. And it took a while longer, but I built up my confidence and security around the strengths that I really never knew I had before.
Oh, that is so wonderful. That's so powerful, because we live in a culture that, you know, I don't know what the population, you know, I really don't know how many introverts and how many extroverts, but we live in a population that is dominated by an external, extroverted mm-hmm. ethos. And that mm-hmm. cannot help but take a person who does not have that extroverted ethos and can take it personally and can take it as somewhat negative, and that they are less than, and that's extremely anxiety driven. And so that draws us deeper and deeper into a hole and of less acceptance. And once you come to the point to say, you know, I'm just not built this way, and the way I'm built is very, very good and offers, it's a genuine acceptance of the self and appreciation of the self and what right. you bring to the table and how you can bring it differently. I want to talk about what that looks like. But I want to give one little illustration, and then we're going to slip into a break, and we're going to talk about actions of well, somewhat actions and somewhat more discussion. But you know what I've equated for me as an introvert is that it's a measurement of energy. My introversion and extroversion is measured by how do I receive energy? How is my battery charged? Mm-hmm. And an extrovert, now this is way oversimplified, but an extreme extrovert is energized by people, energized by dialogue, getting on the phone, talking with people, meeting with people. And an introvert, while can do that very, very effectively, that's why people jock that I'm an introvert, because I can do so well with people. But you know what it is, Steve? It's like a battery with a pinhole leak. And that pinhole leak, I can perform under that battery, but by the end of the day or by the end of a couple of days, I have no energy, and I've got to be alone. I've got to. That is the way my battery is recharged. Do you identify with that?
Exactly. I identify exactly with that. And I didn't realize that until, you know, past the midpoint of my career. I thought that to be successful, I should be booking meetings back to back throughout the entire day. You know, I should be going to meetings. I should be talking to people because that's what everybody else did. And it seemed to be the way to climb the ladder. And so I did that. And what I found is exactly what you said. My battery was draining all day long because it was filled with all this tension. And I didn't have any time during the day to recharge. At the end of the day, I finally got home. I crashed on the couch. You know, I couldn't do anything really at home. And it was really hard to recharge. And then I go back the next day and have that same ordeal. And so I think, you know, recognizing, connecting with one's introversion and learning about things like how to recharge our battery, not just at the end of the day, but throughout the day, enables us to be at our best and have our full amount of energy to tackle things and tackle them our way. It's certainly less stressful than trying to do it somebody else's way. So I think that's a great definition of introversion. And
like, tell me some of the ways that you recharge during the day. I mean, I can understand going home and reading or just being silent or just, you know, we can do small groups, being with our spouse. Mm-hmm. But what are some of the ways that you recharge during the day while you were at your office?
So I found that, you know, sometimes if I just have 5 minutes, I could recharge a bit. I could catch my breath and I was good for maybe not the next 5 hours, but I was good for another couple of few hours. And so I would take 7 minutes or so and I might take a walk around the floor or the campus if that's the case. I might listen to some music. I might journal a little bit. Some people meditate for 5 minutes. Anything that kind of gets you into your own personal space for a brief amount of time. Later in my career, I became very comfortable in taking lunches by myself. So, you know, every once in a while, I'd go off campus and I'd have a lunch by myself. And it was just my way of kind of catching my breath, re-energizing for the afternoon, maybe rewarding myself for a really hectic morning. Those things really helped for me to perform at a higher level. I especially think that planning, as we've talked about, is really important, not to book these back-to-back meetings throughout the day, but to have a meeting and have a little bit of time in between the meetings. And there you can grab a few minutes, walk around, do something else to kind of catch your breath, reset your mindset for the next meeting. That will really help to be better prepared for the day than to try and pack it in.
You know what I would do, Steve, that really was helpful for me was it's been since 1990 since I've had a real job. I've been self-employed and working for different companies, and so I have certainly strategic and tactical endeavors with these companies, but I would once a year would just plan a two-night, one-day retreat. So two-night, I had to go to sleep. I had to go to sleep at the place and wake up in the place. Or I had to wake up in the place and then go to sleep that following night. So I had one full day. I would take my flip charts. I would take my books. And I would disconnect from, you know, any social contact, you know, no phones, no, you know, no emails. And all I would do was just sit and plan and just say, what do I need to do? You know, for the introvert, that is so refreshing. I would come back with great clarity on who I was, what I was built to be, what I want to accomplish. I gave myself permission to do that, that I didn't have to do that with a team. I didn't have to do that with feedback with anybody else. It was just me working through, and, you know, I would kind of create my structure and have a full day of it. And it was just, it was delightful, and it helped me so much.
Pretty powerful when you give yourself that permission to do those things. And I think that's a beautiful way to approach it. We've talked many times that planning and preparation is kind of right down our alley. It's actually the most prevalent strength from our survey. And so I think that I used to go into work early before most people were there because I could do a little bit of quiet time work, which was calming for me. And I felt like I got some things done and I was better prepared for the meetings. And sometimes in between meetings, I would do a little bit of calendar review and preparation for the next day, which was calming for me as well. So it was actually a bit of my quiet time. other people might really not like that sort of thing. But I think, as you said, introverts need that planning. And as long as we can recognize our strengths and our needs and address both of those, then we are, you know, really ahead of the game.
You know, I'm getting the sense we're going to take a break right now. And I'm getting the sense that the greater an introvert not only knows, you know, I'm calling it their DNA, that the way they're made up, that not only knows and understands it, but comes to a point of appreciating the value of it and how much they have to offer the world. And, you know, my guess is if you were to take authors, writers, people that have impacted the world for hundreds and thousands of years, I'm going to guess a great majority of those were introverts, were deep thinkers and idea generators. Mm-hmm. I want to encourage all of our introverts, and know we're going to get a little more tactical in the second half. And until then, let's take a brief break, and we'll come right back. Hi there, this is Charlie Hedges, and you are listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie with my special guest, Steve Friedman, who is author of The Corporate Leader and The Courage. Oh my goodness, it's slipping my mind, Steve.
It's The Corporate Introvert, How to Lead and Thrive with Confidence, and In Search of Courage.
In Search of Courage, a personal memoir, all on introversion, and we're talking about the power of the introvert, rather than how the introvert is sort of the outcast and the outlier in society, that the introvert provides so much strength and wisdom to the world.
Mm-hmm.
I would like you to tell a story that after you were 30 years at Shell Oil, you retired, mm-hmm. and then you had a retirement party. At that retirement party, you announced that you were an introvert. What was the response of your audience? And there were a couple dozen people at least in that meeting.
Yeah, there were several dozen people kind of spread across my 30 years of career. And so I had known some of these people for many, many years. So we had a good retirement party. Everybody toasted, and we recalled fond memories and fun times and challenging projects we were on. And toward the end, I got up front and I was going to share with them a bit about what I was going to do in my next chapter. And so I said, you know, I really want to write. I used to write when I was in high school. I considered a journalism career when I was in college, and I really missed that. So I was going to write. So the next question was, well, what do you think you're going to write about? And I said, well, I've been thinking a lot about that, and I'm going to write about my introversion. And as soon as that sentence came out of my mouth, the dozens of people in the crowd just went silent. And they started to look at me, and they looked around a little bit. And then suddenly, you know, some of my friends in the crowd said, oh, you're not an introvert. I mean, I've worked with you. I've traveled. I've gone to dinner with you. We've been in the trenches. I know you're not an introvert. And the chorus kind of resounded that for the whole group. And my initial thought was, wow, I have really pulled it off. I kind of wore a mask the vast majority of my career, and I had pulled it off. People thought I was an extrovert, and I did pretty well in my career. And so kudos to me for having done that. The second thought I had was, really, what a shame that I couldn't share my true self with all these people that I'd worked for years with. And as a result, I had many health issues for much of my career, as we talked about earlier, and I missed such an opportunity to create bonds. I mean, we were friends at work. If I couldn't actually share my true personality and who I was, then were we really deep friends? The third thought I had the next morning, I thought, you know, what a missed opportunity that really was. I was a leader, had the good fortune to lead a variety of teams for a bit over half of my career, and I never shared my introversion in those sort of situations. It was not popular in the cultures that I worked in, and I didn't have the courage to do that. And so, again, I kind of kept that hidden. As a leader, I had the opportunity, I had the pulpit, if you will, to share that and encourage other introverts in the organization to be proud and embrace their strengths instead of staying in the background and being what I call the hidden half. I had that opportunity. I had the opportunity to talk to others, managers and extroverts, and share the strengths that we introverts bring to the table and how they might be able to change their work team and their approach in meetings to get more out of introverts and therefore better solutions by the whole team. I had that opportunity, like not everybody has, and I missed that opportunity. And it really was a reflective moment, and I was really embarrassed by the fact that I missed that opportunity. But I will tell you that drove me since then to say, you know, I love to write and I want to write about introversion, and I want to see if I can help other people to accelerate their own journey, to recognize who they are, to celebrate their strengths, and for others, extroverts and leaders, if you will, to recognize that it's the whole of the organization that really everything needs to be built around. And so that's really what's driven me through my books and my website, is that moment when I realized I had missed an opportunity for 30 years.
Yeah, you know, and I've got to tell you, the pastor in me says that wants to tell you, don't be so hard on yourself, because you were merely trying to survive, and you were doing the best you could at survival, and now new information has come to you, new insight has come to you, and now you were writing what you couldn't have written at the time. That would you weren't at a place to do that, so. So this is your place, this is your platform, and this is a time to be honored. So I really, you know, congratulate you on doing that. I think it's incredible.
I appreciate that, Charlie. And I do that. I don't think if I hadn't gone through the challenges I had from my childhood through all these work experiences, that I wouldn't have the experience to truly write about it and the solutions that are out there. Because my story is not unique. There are many, many introverts. Between 40 introverts. There are many introverts in every organization and every social group, and most of them have at least a period of their time where they're not comfortable and confident to share that with others and to be themselves. And so I can relate to that, and I think it helps drive me to try and make a difference along the way.
You know, it makes me wonder. I'm really thinking, I have no data to support this. It's just coming from anecdotal information, but I have a lot of experience in recovery groups in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I wonder how many alcoholics are introverts, anxious, talking to people, and find the numbing aspect of alcohol that gives them permission to be that accepted, extroverted, wonderful person that they are feeling a lack of.
Yeah, that's a very interesting subject. I've done a little research and not really found anything that definitively says that it's twice as likely or anything like that. But there's a lot of anecdotal information and stories that would support your suggestion.
Yeah.
On my website, I have guest bloggers every month that share their own personal story, whatever that is. And actually, in this month of February, my guest blogger is someone who is an introvert and was not only an alcoholic but addicted to drugs in order to cope with the challenges of being an introvert. And they pretty much lost it all. Their company went bankrupt and everything. It was really tough for them. But eventually, they kind of went through the process of finding themselves and learning about that, and they use that experience to stand up and help others. But you know, I think there's many examples of people that turn to other means to try and cope with what is an enormous stress every day for many introverts.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned something that I can really identify with, and you say larger meetings, conferences and network events are enormously anxiety-ridden happenings in the life of an introvert. And in large companies like you were in, and in sales companies especially, or manufacturing companies, conferences and networking, you know, and these large meetings are just part of doing business, and yet it is hell. Now, you had, I really want you to tell this story. You expressed this concern to a boss in your company who suggested an alternative approach to conference expectations that I thought was brilliant. Would you tell us about that?
Certainly. And as you say, I had many conferences I would go to every year, and they all had cocktail hours, and they all had, you know, networking between breaks in the conference that at least half the people there loved and thrived on, but I was certainly not one of them. And for years, I struggled with that. I mean, I drank a lot to get through it, but I would get on the phone afterwards with my wife, and just I was miserable. And so what I realized, and it was kind of late in my career, but I had a fantastic boss, and he was very insightful. He was definitely an extrovert. However, he understood people really well, and he understood me probably better than I understood myself at the time. And he said, listen, we have a conference coming up that we're going to all go to, and I know you've been to a lot of conferences before, you know, and we talked about my anxiety around conferences. And he said, what do you think I'm sending to you, you to this conference for? And I said, well, you know, meeting a lot of people and, you know, schmoozing and getting to know a lot of people and trying to do some business. And he said, well, you know, it is that. It is meeting people and developing business opportunities. But nowhere will I tell you that you need to go into this sea of hundreds of strangers and drum up business. Some people act very well in those situations and thrive on it, and they'll walk away with 100 business cards. That is not your strength, Steve Friedman. And what I would encourage you to do is take it in bite-sized pieces, what I now call networking intimacy. Don't try and network with 100 people or even 10 people. But he encouraged me to set up meetings with some of the key counterparts that I knew were going to be there, some of whom I had talked with on the phone and others I did not know, but to make a call in advance and say, hey, can we meet for lunch? Or can two of us from each of our companies meet in a meeting room and just get to know each other a little bit and chat about some business opportunities and see where that goes? And I thought, you know, I thought, that's simple. Why didn't I think about that before? But it changed my approach to one of the most straining experiences of my life. And I ended up setting up a number of those meetings, and in every one of them, we got to know each other much better than we would have in a room of 100 people. We developed opportunities. I felt much more comfortable to communicate with them. So I didn't walk away with 100 cards, but I walked away with probably about a half dozen cards of people that we were definitely going to meet again when we got back to our offices. And it changed my approach. At the end of the day, honestly, I felt like if I wanted to go to that cocktail hour, I would go. No pressure. I'd already really done my business of meeting people. And so I would walk into those cocktail hours, and sometimes I would see faces that I was familiar with from the meetings and whatnot, and I would chat with them for a while, and then sometimes that was enough for me, and I would leave, and I'd go back to the room. I'd spend a little bit of quiet time, might even have dinner by myself, and I felt like I felt proud that I had achieved my objective my way. It really changed my approach, and it really begs the question, do we really have to do it the way we've always been doing it, or the way a lot of people around us seem to be approaching things, whether it's networking, cocktail hours, meetings, or anything else? And the answer usually is no. Our leaders and our managers usually just want us to be productive, to do it in the way that suits us best. And when I was provided with that freedom by that manager, it really changed my approach considerably.
You know, that is a brilliant suggestion. I have sort of accidentally fallen into that. In that, my wife knows I'm not a fan of small talk, and so if you want to talk about what's happening during the day, you know, go, you're not going to find me. But if you want to talk about ideas and philosophies and strategies and deeper thinking, you know, I'm going to be in. And so I find myself in larger groups when I go to group parties or group events. I take hostages. I find a person and that I just know I'm going to connect with, and we connect and we get deep. And so I could walk away from, I just went to an event that had 102 people, and I walked away with 3 business cards, but we're all going to work together. Now, had I done that, trying to do it with all 102 people, I could have collected a bunch of business cards, but I have no idea which ones we're going to work together. I'm doing blind emails to them. I know we talked about something important, but I don't remember what it was, rather than we know exactly the subject. So I think your boss was brilliant, and I think that whole conference expectation idea that he has is very, very relevant. I want to close our time, and I would like to quote something you have written that I liked a lot. And you wrote this: I have finally realized to be happy, I don't need to change myself. I need to be myself. I don't need to change myself. I need to be, understand, and fulfill my authentic self. I love that advice. And we never do that, and we never really do well when we attempt to be someone else. So it behooves us to try to understand ourselves and find honor in that. Are there places we can change, that we can improve? Absolutely. But our very core is who we are. Any final thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that it really hit home for me when I was thinking about that, because I spent a lot of my time trying to be the person next door, the person in the other cubicle, you know, somebody who seemed to be doing everything well. And I think, you know, today's society, regardless of whether you're an introvert or an extrovert, it's oftentimes we look at other people, we compare ourselves to other people, whether it's our, you know, how much money we have or the car or the house or the job title or whatnot. And what I realized was really life is just about trying to find our authenticity and explore it, embrace it. And it's not about chasing what somebody else has, which frankly may not be satisfying to us at all. And so it's really redirected how I spend my time and trying to look more inwardly focused and then share that rather than chasing somebody else's idea of success.
I so agree. Steve Friedman, it has been such a delight to have you on the show. I think we informed a lot of people today. This was an excellent show. Now, I know people can get, I'm going to put your 2 books on, you know, they will be on the show notes, that people will get The Corporate Introvert and also In Search of Courage. I'm going to put your website, Beyond Introversion, so, and there will be a link to it so they can just click right on and get that. Any other way you would like people to get a hold of you?
Thanks, Charlie. The best way to get a hold of me is through my website. My email's on there. I love to get questions and comments from anybody in the community, and I respond to all of those. There's lots of quizzes and other resources on my website. I now have it's about a 105-page booklet that's titled The Questions Introverts Ponder and the Answers Extroverts Need to Hear. And it's free when you go to the website. So anybody can go check it out. It's free when you get to the website. And you can also tap into over 100 blogs and quizzes and other things. So I'm just trying to put a lot of resources out there. And this booklet in particular that I mentioned is, I think it helps to answer some of the questions and helps introverts to recognize that they're not alone. They have a lot of the same challenges and questions that other introverts have. And also for extroverts, many introverts are trying to figure out how to have that discussion with an extrovert and to share it in a positive way. And I think the booklet goes a long way towards providing that mechanism to do that too. So it's, I encourage people to go check it out on the website.
Yeah, I have loved the website, and I encourage listeners to check it out. It's a very well done website. You've done a really good job. You know, I'm particular about websites, and I think you've done a very good job on this on this web presence. And once again, Steve Friedman, thank you so much for spending time with me on The Next Chapter with Charlie.
Thank you, Charlie.
Okay, well, that's it for today. This is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.